I think I'll do the same for myself as well, actually. Okay, so welcome again. And so what we're going to, what we've started is looking at a figure called Shantideva. And Shantideva wrote a text, no, he didn't write a text. He proclaimed some verses which were written down eventually and became this very famous text called the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And so this is what I'm going to be looking at this evening. It's just one aspect of this, what I think is an amazing text. And just trying to connect this text back to our lived experience. So I'm going to start, I'm going to spend most of the talk looking at the main concept, the main idea that binds this beautiful text together. And this concept is it's the mystery of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta translates as the awakening mind, or it's the mind and heart responding, living out of wisdom. So bodhicitta is this relationship between knowing through the intellect and through the direct intuitive knowing of the heart, and how that relates to or how that informs our actions. So bodhicitta's a heart mind filled with wisdom and the natural responsiveness to the suffering world that wisdom then elicits. So it's this combination of wisdom and compassion is bodhicitta. So this is a very large area to try and cover in half an hour, but that's what I'm going to be trying to do, just trying to introduce that. So I'm going to say a bit about just two aspects of bodhicitta, and then I'm also going to be looking at patience, because as Shantideva beautifully explains, patience is really one of the vital practices that sustain and help develop the awakening mind. So I'll be looking at how by using patience we can become less bound by preferences, less bound by agendas, and ultimately all personal biases and distortions. Because it's only through this, it's because we so need clear seeing, clear knowing, because that's the only way that we can really act skillfully. If we're not informed by wisdom, we tend to perpetuate suffering. So just as an introduction to the text, I just want to say that Shantideva, this person, really evokes a radical vision for spiritual practice. He really is a very radical practitioner. And I've been kind of looking at the text, this text that's attributed to him, for a while now. And I really find it very challenging and very disturbing to try to face it and make sense of it. Because one of the things that Shantideva does so well is he's absolutely uncompromising in directly pointing to how things are. And although the powerful words that he speaks are very much cloaked with beauty, they are still incredibly potent. So actually for me, I really enjoy Shantideva's words, because there's this kind of combination of directness, but also I feel kind of seduced by him. There's no way to avoid what he's talking about, because he cloaks it so beautifully. And I feel like Shantideva, really, he's kind of seducing me into something which is utterly overwhelming, utterly terrifying. And the only way I can really face that is Well, by working specifically with patients. So my sense is that this intention of Shantideva is to really ignite and bring to life in each of us the passion and the longing to embody and live out of a heart and mind that is overflowing with the clear resolve to alleviate suffering wherever we find it. So this is really uncompromising. And Shantideva argues that this will naturally arise when we are steeped, we're completely soaked in the wisdom of the emptiness of all phenomena. When we really see to the extent that which we, other people, and the world generally suffers because we don't recognise that all things are impermanent. All things are insubstantial, and ultimately, unfortunately, all things are unsatisfactory. But these ideas are really challenging. So when we really see and know the suffering that we and everyone else is bringing upon ourselves because we are seeking permanent solidity and satisfaction where unfortunately none ultimately can be found. This is a painful and quite sort of tragic view of life. To really stay with this vision is really challenging. But what it does is it really develops, I think, a sense of pathos. So it's this combination of real beauty and tragedy. This sense that life, because we seek our own permanence, in doing so we destroy our potential. So because we're kind of locking or binding around how we feel things should be, that's actually kind of takes us away from this unfolding life that we all have potential to live. So when we really see that, there's only one sane response to this vision, and that's to try to meet all life, all experience, with compassion. So Shantideva presents us with this really beautiful and challenging vision. And he distinguishes very early on in the text the difference between aspiring bodhicitta and active bodhicitta. So this is quite important. So he states, this is from the text, "Bodhicitta, the awakening mind, is known in brief to have two aspects. First, aspiring bodhicitta, practical engagement, as corresponding to the wish to go, and then to setting out. And the wise should understand respectfully the difference that divides the two. From bodhicitta, from this aspiration to awaken for the sake of all beings, from bodhicitta, in intention, great results arise for those still turning on the wheel of life. Yet merit does not rise from it in ceaseless streams, as is the case with active bodhicitta. So there is some merit just to simply see the sense of this connection between the awakening mind and compassion, but to actually really engage with that as a practice, to really practice to live our lives out of emptiness, is really where apparently ceaseless streams of merit flow. Well, we could really hear this for those of you who have heard of the Eightfold Path. Really, this is a restatement of the Eightfold Path. So there's vision, and then the limbs of the path, which we skillfully use to help us align to that vision. What is so radical about Shantideva's perspective is that because he's utterly soaked in this wisdom of emptiness, realising that ultimately There is no self and there is no other. So this is to really know that. This liberates him from any agenda except for liberation itself. And this creates an open-hearted practice which naturally alleviates suffering wherever suffering arises, whoever it is arising through. The open heart turns towards that experience out of emptiness. So Shantideva is challenging us actively to engage, to meditate, to develop ethical sensibility, to develop patience, energy and wisdom explicitly to benefit and support the welfare of all. So this really is an amazing vision of practice. To not sit down and meditate for ourselves, but to imagine that what we're doing is actually, the clear intention is that we are meditating, we're developing skillful mental states so that we can actually benefit others, so that we can alleviate suffering. We act ethically, not for our own benefit, but for the benefit of others. We develop patience so that we can actually be with others in a skillful way so that we don't perpetuate suffering. So this is bodhicitta. And Shantideva is encouraging us not just to hold to this vision for a week, or a month, or a year. Shantideva suggests that we sustain this intention for countless lifetimes until all suffering has been alleviated. So it really is a huge vision that Shantideva is laying out for us, a huge challenge. So I want to start now just by turning to this term bodhicitta. So bodhicitta, so this is from the first section, Awakening Bodhicitta. And we actually read this last week. I think it's such an important verse. At night in darkness, thick with clouds, a lightning flash gives a moment's brightness. So sometimes, by the power of the Buddha, the mind of the world might for a moment turn towards acts of merit. At night in darkness, thick with clouds, a lightning flash gives a moment's brightness. So sometimes, by the power of the Buddha, the mind of the world might for a moment turn towards acts of merit. So from this verse, my interpretation is that the first characteristic of bodhicitta, this awakening mind, is that it seems to arise in us, through us, unbeckoned. It's as if we are called by some other power. We are lost in the darkness of our self-absorption. We're lost in self-interest, in our strivings, in our attempts to create permanence, stability, satisfaction, substantiality, where ultimately there isn't anything. When, like a flash of lightning, the clash of clear seeing, this greater perspective breaks in upon us and illuminates for a moment our life. It's as if just in that moment of flash of lightning, we find ourselves seeing things with a greater clarity, maybe for the first time. So this kind of flash of clear seeing, I completely relate it back to when we're trying to meditate and we simply we find ourselves suddenly recognizing, knowing what we're doing. I'm here trying to meditate. We find ourselves reawakening after we've been drifting, daydreaming, or just simply kind of unconscious, unaware of ourselves. And that return to awareness, personally, I just find continually amazing. How does that come about? What power in us is able to move from that state of unconsciousness, distractedness, back into a real bright awareness? And of course, this process happens outside of meditation as well. Wherever it is, there's this moment of brightness where we see our life, we see the world differently. And maybe we see with great clarity actually the pain we are inhabiting. Or maybe we really see clearly beauty. But however it is, we just recognise a sense of direct truth. This, in this moment, is how it is. Whatever's happening, whether it's pain or pleasure, we see it with incredible precision and exactness. And when this precision of experience arises, there's a real unexpected quality that comes alongside it, which is of ease, of release, of spaciousness, and a natural brightness. So it's as if there's a sense of relief emerges through reaching the heart of any experience. As if we recover something that has lain beneath or within experience, within our life, and yet it seemed impossible to access that part of ourselves through any act of will, any act of, any act really, of self-power. All we can do is bring hope that awareness sustains and is with us. And it's simply through awareness that we access these deeper, clearer sense of our being, of our potential. So this is the first aspect of the awakening mind, that it's like a bodhicitta. It's like a precious gift, really. It's like the grace of the Buddhas, the power of the awakening mind. It washes into our self-limited lives and offers us overwhelming, clear seeing. And this clear seeing, this experience, leaves us then having to grapple with and integrate whatever is revealed through that flash of lightning, through that clear seeing. So these periods of clear seeing, sometimes they are disturbing and confusing. And this brings me to the second aspect of bodhicitta, the second characteristic of the awakening mind. And that is that the awakening mind is disorientating or reorientating. When we really see into the actual, when we see clearly, the simplicity of that is shocking. The precise detail of beauty or the clear seeing of suffering is deeply affecting. Maybe out of that clear seeing, we really see old, well-worn habits and recognise the extent that they either harm ourselves or others. Or they might just feel really redundant or restrictive. Maybe we begin to question our relationships, our career or our lifestyle. It's hard because clear seeing, what it tends to do is demand real change. When we begin to try to live from new values, the new vision that we've been given, this creates a real vulnerability and a rawness. Because what we're doing in this clear seeing, or responding to the clear seeing, is that we are experimenting, we're trying to relate differently. Because of what we've been shown. And this trying to kind of respond differently to our life can feel really clumsy and awkward at first. And so there is this kind of disorder, this kind of discomfort that comes from the new. But alongside that discomfort, we actually feel most wholeheartedly alive and whole when we are trying, when we're aspiring, when we're really connected to our deepest values, when we're really living out of the vision that we've been given by this awakening. So the awakening mind is really calling us into life. It affects our perceptions and our values. Not sure how long I've been talking for. Okay.
20 minutes.
So when we have this experience of being opened by being given this gift of the awakened mind, it seems to arrive for different people in different ways. So for many people, it seems to arise as a consequence of loss, as a consequence of separation, of grief, serious illness. And for others, it might arise through meeting great beauty or being deeply touched by music, or poetry, or the Dharma. It will certainly arise in meditation and study, and it sometimes arises simply in communication. The common thread is that something is opening our seeing, something is disrupting our usual habits of being. We could say that in these flashes of clarity, that this really is the grace of the Buddhas breaking our mind open. That these disruptive events is actually grace from the Buddha. So through this grace, we do become completely disorientated, or maybe better, reorientated. Because these period, these moments of direct knowing, direct seeing, really spurs us on to a different way of living our lives, a different way of relating to our precious, fleeting life, and hopefully to each other. Unfortunately, even though that we are often given these really positive, shocking moments, and the ensuing period of disorientation, these moments do pass and fade. We do kind of all have, I believe, these experiences, but often, or what tends to happen, is that we rebuild ourselves. We really reinstate the old patterns of our habits. So this is the nature, this thing of the clear flash of lightning. It is fleeting. And it can easily leave us. So time and time again, we tend to fall back into a compensatory life, where we're starting to reinforce agendas and preferences and rebuilding our restrictive habits. Now this might all sound a bit dramatic, but actually it happens in small and big ways. So just say, if we look at our meditation experience, for instance, was just in a simple 20-minute period of meditation, what we're actually doing in that practice, I would suggest, is that we're constantly opening and then closing, opening, being drawn, attracted by something, being diverted, and it's very hard just to stay open. We tend to either resist or be attracted to the experience. So this is just in a very small way in meditation practice, this sense of how we get these brief flashes of opening and releasing, and then we notice the way that we kind of reconstitute ourselves, rebuild ourselves. And sometimes we notice these kind of movements over slightly longer periods. Going back again to a meditational practice, we might have this really expansive, beautiful, satisfying meditation practice, and then we come out of it and find ourselves snapping at our friend or our lover, and just kind of very different quality to our mind suddenly is there. And this painful juxtaposition between being really open and then snapping shut again, that snapping shut is us rebuilding ourselves in a shape that we feel safe in. It's a tragedy. This is what we do. We rebuild our limitations to create a sense of stability and permanence. And what we're doing in that is that we are banishing a sense of our potential, banishing this kind of flow of what we can become, because it doesn't quite fit the story of who we believe we are. So this is what we do, ongoingly. I imagine what I'm saying isn't unfamiliar to you. I hope it's not. I think this is what we do. So the other tragic way that we operate, unfortunately, is that we might diminish these gifts of being broken open in some way through the awakening mind. We diminish them by when we find ourselves in these opening and disorientating experiences, we relate to the effects of these openings as if these effects are a problem, as if there's something wrong with us, something wrong with the other. So just because we see things differently, become unsure or confused, this can feel like there's something faulty in our makeup, that something in us or in someone else has to be made right, has to be altered or eradicated in some way. So it's as if this sort of seeing things differently, being drawn into this new vision of life, it threatens the old ways of being, and so we rebuild our old self by reference to these redundant strategies, and we make this new perspective that we're starting to open into, we make it wrong or bad. So how tragic is that? That we have been given this gift and that we close down around it. But actually this sense of being disorientated is actually a really precious resource that we can really rely on to help us mature, if we can simply rest in that disorientation. Be patient with that. Because for anything new to emerge, the old has to die. There has to be space made for the new sense of our life to emerge. And this can only happen as we release from our old habits, from our old ways of being. And this isn't an easy process. This is really challenging. The spiritual life is really challenging. Personally, I'm sure any of us who teaches at the centre, it's always a bit of a mystery. Where's everybody gone? All those lovely people that we met, and where are they? And actually, I was wondering about this. Maybe one of the reasons, I'm not saying it's the only reason, but maybe one of the reasons why people drop out of these classes, about dropping out of connection with the Dharma, it's just too much. The Dharma is disruptive. If we come through the doors of the centre, we are going to be disturbed. And here we are, we've done it now. In a way, we can't escape. So, actually, we have been open to some extent. And this process of opening, it is uncomfortable. But also, it gives such satisfaction to really be more fully the sort of the wholeness of our life. I feel that that discomfort is important. So what I'm saying there is, when we face, when we move towards the Dharma, when we face the Dharma, it will affect us. And just really encourage you not to feel that you are so bad or so broken, so confused, that you can't make use of this gift. This gift is the most precious thing that can ever be given to us, this awakening mind. Shantideva teaches us to place great value on the ability to turn towards our experience. And this is the foundation and the primary activity of the spiritual life. This is the heart of mindfulness. The ability to really know and explore experience is absolutely crucial for our maturation. So when we find ourselves opened by a lightning strike, ideally we turn towards those experiences. We get to know the experience fully so that we can integrate the treasure that we have been given in that moment. To integrate through becoming disorientated. This isn't easy. There's a tendency to want to turn away, to numb ourselves out of uncomfortable feelings, or simply to go unconscious. But I suppose I just want to stress over and over again, disruption, disorientation are really potentially really precious. These flashes of lightning in the darkness arise for everyone, and if we're alert, we can really recognise them as just that. These are precious omens, precious gifts, precious opportunities to mature. Much of spiritual practice is resourcing our psyche to be able to develop, to be able to bear the awake state, to bear reality. The spiritual life is a process of integrating these moments of vision so that we can stay with them. In awakeness. But this is the process of maturation. So Shantideva suggests a number of ways of ways of maintaining and nurturing this awakening mind. And I'm just going to say a little bit about patience. This is the one of the crucial aspects to help us stay with this open state. So what patience does, what it works against, is hatred. So it's hatred in the sense of resistance to how things are. The making of something, making something bad or wrong, seems to often arise alongside clear seeing. So as I've said already, when we meet reality, when we see things clearly, we tend to diminish it by weaving unhelpful stories around it. And so these weaving of subtle stories around the direct experience, in a way, is how hatred can manifest. So it might come as, it's not fair, it's their fault. Well, it's my fault. If only things could be different, less of this and more of that. If only he or she were different, then everything would be fantastic. Or maybe if we had more time to meditate or more time to study the Dharma, then this life that I'm in right now would be bearable. If only my childhood or my parents, my career, my sex life, if only my health were different, then I could be happy. If only I could achieve that or control this, then everything miraculously would fall into place. And then I could bear to live with all this beautiful clarity forever. This is actually, I don't know whether that's what you do, but certainly there's this kind of, these sort of longings for things to be different. Longings that, these kind of endless fantasies that if we can just adjust life a bit here or there, it will all come right. But actually, what that is really a manifestation of resistance, a manifestation of hatred towards what's already here. So this is why we need patience. We need patience to counter these unhelpful readings. Patience is our lifeline if we're going to stay awake in this changing, uncontrollable flux. Shantideva encourages us to trust the open state, however uncomfortable. To not close it off, even when things appear to be difficult. He says, patience. Happiness is scarce. Suffering persists with no effort. But only through suffering is there escape. So mind, be strong. There's nothing which remains difficult that is practiced. So through practice with minor discomforts, even major discomforts become bearable. So the development of patience is a key ally in turning towards experience, returning again and again into awareness. Shantideva reminds us the need to practice with minor discomforts. So this can be a really strong practice to really notice the extent that we want things to be different. We want particular people to be different. We want life to be different. And in that sort of wanting the thing to be different to how it actually is, we might actually miss what's really precious in that arising moment. So in nothing else, by practicing patience, we really begin to notice or weaken the ways in which we create this sense of false selfhood by clinging to our own biases and views. So really entering fully into experience is radical and revolutionary because it leads us back into the awakening mind. We can begin anywhere. We can begin with any experience and simply go deeper and deeper into the experience we're with, and it will meet the awakening mind. So this is truly amazing. So this means that our work colleagues, our families, our lovers, they all give us numerous occasions to notice and bear minor discomfort. And out of that minor discomfort, by being with that, we're actually practicing to stay open. So we're being showered gifts from this discomfort. We've been given the opportunity to really develop patience. And through patience, we cultivate the means to notice and begin to release from these restrictive and painful responses to each other and to life. The more we release and stay open and available, the more we meet reality, how things really are. Shantideva continues, the virtue of suffering has no rival, since from the shock it causes the shock that it causes us, intoxication falls away. There arises compassion for those in cyclic existence. Fear of evil and an arising of a longing for the conqueror. So, where I need to end, I just want to just say, just to be clear that what this points to, this last verse I've just read, is not that suffering for its own sake has got any intrinsic worth at all. It's just that if we're really patient, with what appears to cause us suffering, if we stay with that shock, we can begin to distinguish between sensations of pain and pleasure and the overlay, the responses to those sensations. Because it's the responses that is creating the suffering. The suffering is arising from our response to experience. And it's this compulsion to want to make things different, this intoxication of views about how things should be, that is keeping us out of the potential of each moment and limiting the potential for compassion to arise in our life.